to episode 5 of the Soda Pop Podcast. Today we have a former student, Dylan Hodges, with us.
Hi.
He's been working in the music industry for a pretty long time, since he was a teenager, pretty much. So, my name's Mark.
And I'm Lainey.
And so let's get right into it.
So, Dylan, considering that both of your parents are employees of the university, was it always decided that you were going to go to school here, or did you consider moving off somewhere else? And was there anything that made you choose UNA over any other schools?
Good to be here, guys. Yeah, I grew up going to university events, especially like football games, because my dad works in the athletic department. And the highlight for me was always going to watch the marching band play. So when I would go watch the marching band, my mom was real tight. She was in the marching band when she was in college, and so I would go sit with the band sometimes in like a drummer's lap or something, and they would let me play drums in the stand. So I mean, I was always had this like deep connection to UNA, and you know, I was in the homecoming parade when I was a little kid and stuff. I don't know that it was always decided that I would go to UNA. I imagine my parents always hoped I would go to UNA. But what happened was, when I was in high school, I had, you know, decent grades, and I was already working in the music industry, like you said. I was very serious about it, especially when I was a teenager. So I visited quite a few colleges, and I sort of actually assumed that I would end up at Belmont or something. And I was doing a handy event and maybe 2007 or something, when I was a junior in high school. And one of the heads of the music department at Belmont came to watch me play at Dale's Steakhouse. Do you remember Dale's?
I remember Dale's.
You guys probably don't. Are you a transplant? Are you from somewhere else? Are you from here?
I'm not originally from here, okay. But I came here not 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember Dale's.
Dale's is no longer here. It was Sperry's, and then now it's nothing. But it used to be sort of the fancy restaurant in town. Anyway, they hosted an event for Handy Festival, and I was playing a jazz night there. And someone from Belmont University, you know, made their way to see me and came up and talked to me after I played and said something to the effect of, like, you should come to Belmont where you'll be just like everyone else. He said something like that, and I thought, that's not what I want to be. I don't want to be like everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, I do want to be challenged and around people who can challenge me, but I don't want to just be white noise. And so I felt like when I met with UNA a few years later, they were clearly excited to have me. And I had a full tuition scholarship here, and I knew everyone already. It just felt like a better fit in a lot of ways. I just felt like I could do more good here, and maybe it would be better for me in turn.
And was the DEI program around when you were here, the entertainment industry program, was that around, or was that just an imagined
thought? So it wasn't its own, it wasn't its own department or anything at the time. It was, you know, there was the music department, and then there was the business department, and so I don't even know how it's set up these days. You said, was that the something EI program? Or no, it was not around. I didn't even know what that was, really. So I started off as a major in music, and it was really easy. So I changed my major, and I wanted to major in something that I felt like would benefit me from a knowledge standpoint. So I talked to Bob Garferick, who was running I already knew him, and he was running the entertainment industry management major. And so I talked to him, and it seemed like that was going to be a great fit for me. So I majored in entertainment industry management. And then about 2 years into college, I was almost done, like, because I had some qualifying hours from high school. So I added a double major in something, and I didn't know what it was going to be, but I just wanted it to be something that would challenge me and something that was hard, because I felt like I was being given this great gift of tuition-free school. So I majored in accounting, which was very hard, and it definitely lowered my GPA, but I came out okay.
You said that you were in the business even, like, as a teenager, so let's talk about that a little bit. So Dylan was actually, he competed in the national flat picking guitar competition, and he actually won when I believe it's when you were 17. So, how, like, after you had won, did you know, like, that this was what you wanted to do with your life? Did you know that right off the bat, or did it take some time for you to realize?
Well, the National Flat Picking Championship is this weird thing. It's a lot of people don't even know that this culture exists, but here in Alabama, there's a big one that's actually pretty close by. It's not as big as the national championship, but it's the Athens Fiddlers Convention. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not,
Yeah,
but
it's a big deal locally, and it happens at Athens State University. But there's this whole culture of bluegrass contests where you go and compete against other players of your instrument. So from the time I was like 11 or 12, I was competing in guitar contests against adults and whatnot. But the biggest competition for guitars is in Winfield, Kansas, and it's the National Flat Picking Championship. And you asked, did I know what I wanted to do after I won? Well, I certainly knew what I wanted to do before I won. My only goal in life was to win that championship. And, I had this really lofty goal of winning when I was, 14 or something like that. I wanted to be the youngest ever. The youngest ever is Mark O'Connor, who won when he was 15 or something like that. He's,
so
you know,
close.
he's a ge he's a genius. But I just wanted to beat him, and I didn't win when I was 14. So I was a little bit disappointed. But I didn't really ever think I was gonna win. I thought I would actually win when I was in my 30s or maybe when I was in 40, like most people who enter the contest. But when I won when I was 17, it was a complete shock to me, and really a shock to everyone in that community. Like I was relatively known in that scene, but I think they all saw me as like, he'll win one day, like he'll have his time. But it definitely came premature in a lot of people's eyes, so a lot of people were like frustrated that I won. But anyway, I was so happy and excited. I'd never felt so fulfilled before because it was like my lifelong goal. And once I'd achieved it, I came home to Florence, and I was on the front page of the paper, and I was telling my friends like, "You'll never believe this. I won the National Flat Picking Championship." Expecting everyone to be like, "Wow, you won the National Flat Picking Championship." But instead, everyone was like, "What's the National Flat Picking Championship?" And so, long-winded to answer your question, I didn't know what I wanted to do after that. I went from being so proud and so thrilled to have achieved this huge thing to, whoa, no one knows what this is. This, like, I need to raise the ceiling. I need to raise my expectations. I need to shoot bigger. And my goal eventually became to expose more people to the style of music that I love, which is acoustic guitar and flat picking, and that's inevitably what brought me to the Fire Kid project.
Now you of course won that when you were 17, so that means you were in high school, and so you graduated from Florence High, correct?
Yeah, it was then Florence. I was maybe the first class to graduate going through 4 years at Florence High School because it was Bradshaw before that.
So while you were there, it wasn't was it the Florence Academy of Fine Arts, or FAFA as some of you know it, established yet? Or and if so, were you a part of it, or did you steer away from that?
I have no idea what that is. I think, my sister Melanie, I don't even, she told me that they were changing the name of the school or something like that. It was definitely arts heavy, even when I was there as a public school. Like, there was a heavy emphasis on choir and show choir and marching band, and they had a decent recording studio with Pro Tools and screen printing, and it was essentially an art school even when it wasn't an art school. And it gave me a lot of opportunities. Like I took this graphic arts class, but the teacher, he was connected to the recording studio, so he just let me use the recording studio every day for a couple hours. I mean, it was I learned that's where I learned how to use a DAW. I learned how to use Pro Tools because of my high school classes. And I don't think a lot of a lot of schools don't have that, so I was really fortunate.
No.
See, I didn't learn about Pro Tools until this year, freshman year in college. So.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy. But
I was really fortunate.
So rolling into our last question, do you have any advice for those of us who are like up and coming in the industry, who like on where to go, do's and don'ts in the industry, or anything like that?
I can give you a little advice there. What I've learned post-college, and even to some extent what I was told in college, especially in the sort of engineering type classes, is that nothing stays the same. So I think it's probably true in almost any industry these days that you can't get too comfortable with the way things are, because then out of nowhere, seemingly, Spotify comes and changes the whole model. Like, there will always be another Spotify. So you have to always be learning and always be prepared to adapt to whatever the industry throws at you.
Awesome. That's some great advice. So now I think we're going to listen to a new song of his from his new EP.
All right, let's do it. Here we go.
Did I spend it on? Tattoos and perfect hair. Dressed in the finest clothes. Look at her over there. That's where my money goes. Full house with aces high. And she don't ever fold. That's where my money goes. She's why I'm always broke. She's why I'm never broke. That's where my money goes.
Money don't mean nothing to me. I just want your honey, baby. Money don't mean nothing to me. I just want your honey, baby.
I know that I ain't rich. She's happy head to toe. I'd rather make her smile. That's where my money goes. Just tell me where to land. Europe or Mexico. Wherever she points on a map, that's where my money goes. That's where my money goes. She's worth her weight in gold. She's worth her weight in gold. Bought her a ring so she knows. That's where my money goes. She's why I'm always broke. She's why I'm never broke. That's where my money goes.
It's about that dollar bill. I would drop a stack on shorty only for the thrill. I was looking for a dime piece with whom I want to build. But it's only been a week and I done put her in my will. Spend it all, girl. I've been working so the both of us can ball, girl. We run up a check and cop a jet because it's all world trips to Jamaica. Don't worry about the paper. I'ma fly around the globe and you know I'ma take it.
Money don't mean nothing. I just want her by my side now. Where we headed next, we never know. But we can find.
Cause I'd rather be broke than without her. Swear that I'm the richest in the world because I found her. She like a dream and I don't ever wanna wake up. Just keep on loving on me, girl, until I'm bankrupt.
Oh, that's where my money goes. She's worth her weight in gold. She's worth her weight in gold. Bought her a ring so she knows. That's where my money goes. She's why I'm always broke. She's why I'm never broke. That's where my, oh, that's where my money goes. She's worth her weight in gold. She's worth her weight in gold. Bought her a ring so she knows. That's where my money goes. She's why I'm always broke. She's
Okay, so the rapper.
Yes.
Is that like Chica?
That's Chica.
I knew it. Yeah. I was like, I recognized the sound and I was like, I know who that is. So yeah. I was like, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so that song's called Where My Money Goes, and it was on our EP that we just put out, XY. It came out in September.
Oh my gosh. It's awesome. Okay, so who all did like the beginning where there was there all that talking and
yeah, that's all it's all me. It's me, and I just made it sound like a crowd and just kind of doubled it a bunch of times and pitched the tones up and down so it sounded like women also, and I just made it sound like a, you know, a telephone effect. But yeah, so I made all that with my partner Heidi. She's the one that's singing in there as well, and then our good friend Willie Breeding helped with the production. So we did everything. We did everything at home, you know, all the beats and all the sounds and everything. Sorry. Actually, I can't say that that's true. This record has kind of a funny story for how it got made. We wanted to recut some of the guitars because we wanted them to sound a little bit cleaner than the way we could record them at my house. So we didn't have any money for like a studio, but we didn't really have much money for a budget at all for this record. And we knew a guy who worked at a very fancy studio, and it's part of a it's like a B room that doesn't get used very much, but it's got all of this beautiful vintage gear. And you know, we basically asked if we could use it, and he was like, no. And he said, but you can if you just act like you're supposed to be there. So we snuck into this studio and made in about 12 hours we made the whole record.
Wow.
Yeah, that... just by sneaking in to this basement of this fancy place. I don't think anyone knew. We just acted like we were supposed to be there. We walked in and we're like, hey, we're here for the studio downstairs, and they were like, yeah, the key's over there.
That's awesome.
Nobody seemed to mind.
And I mean, Fire Kid has a very, you know, distinct sound to them. It's like three different genres that I could pick out in just that one song mixed together. So you got the bluegrass part, you know, and then you have the like the pop part with the beat, and then you have an entire like, you know, a hip hop verse in there with Chica. Like I really like that actually.
I hate genres. I feel like I don't want to get on a soapbox here, but the history of genre is a history of segregation of race. Where is like it used to be called country records and race records, and how racist is that? You know, just to call any music that's not for white people race music. And it still extends today. I mean, you have it's better now to some extent. There's a lot of like cross pollinization going on, but you know, it's still like R&B and country, and I don't believe in that. I think that great music should be a mosaic of a bunch of different things, and I'm most inspired by the way that producers like Pete Rock and J Dilla, who made these 90s and early 2000s rap records, they had this philosophy that music is a mosaic of a bunch of different genres, and the way that they made their music was on this you know, basically small computer called an MPC, where they would record off of record players, off of vinyls into the machine, and then they would chop it up and take samples from like a acapella song, like a jazzy acapella song, and then take a drum beat from a 70s funk song and, you know, a bass line from a jazz record and put it all in together and chop it up and put them together and make a new song and then rap over it. And I think that it's such a waste to only use that ideology for hip hop. And it doesn't get used as much anymore today because of sampling laws, but we do that. That's what we did. That's what all of this entire XY record is, an experimentation of taking the basically the architecture of 90s hip hop and applying it to what we do, which is a bunch of different genres. And what you don't hear there is while it is a it's bluegrass flat picking, it's in a lot of ways a little bit left of center songwriting. I mean, it's kind of pop, but kind of, you know, 90s country, like leaning on the hook songwriting. And then it's obviously got rap, but it's got this beat, which is a little bit more indicative of Muscle Shoals style, like soul kind, or like funky groove music. But what I was going to say is, what you don't hear there is the next track on the record is a song called Boomerang, which fits sonically into the same place. It's got all the same elements, the same, it draws from the same places of genre, where it's got like a sort of a little bit of a funky beat. It's got the acoustic guitar, but it's got Heidi Feek's dad, Rory Feek, who is a country singer-songwriter, singing on it. So back to back, you have a song that features a rap artist, and then you have like a song that features like the most country singer ever, and they go back to back seamlessly. And I think that's what happens when you find the commonality of music. I think anything can work together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When you're drawing from so many different places, it's just, you just come up with something arguably much more beautiful, I think.
Yeah. And if you go to our YouTube channel, you can actually watch our reactions to the song. And like, I was smiling through the entire thing. It was just so amazing. And every time that thing happened in the back, I like, it still made me like, because I didn't see it coming, but I knew it was coming at some point. It's like,
yeah, that's me going, yeah.
I just think it's awesome too, because I mean, I listened to Dylan when he released his own solo stuff before he started the Fire Kid project, and I mean, it's a huge change into it, and I think it's really cool how you managed to go from, you know, these slow kind of bluegrassy songs to this mix of genres together, and I think it's just really awesome.
Thank you. When I did that solo record, I definitely had a different worldview in a lot of different ways, and I actually just went back and listened to it the other day, because I haven't listened to it in 3 or 4 years, and I had a long drive, and I was like, I wonder if this holds up, and I still find it. I still think it's a beautiful sort of mixture of bluegrass and folk and mm-hmm. whatnot, and especially, you know, the Rumspringa album. And I'm glad in a lot of ways that I didn't move forward with this new music as Dylan Hodges. I'm glad I called it Fire Kid, because it's definitely a departure. But listening to it the other day made me want to go back and make another Americana record someday. Because I have a fresh, you know, having been away from it for so long, I have a fresh perspective of it. And honestly, I think most Americana music is garbage these days. Like, I think the whole genre kind of sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed your old stuff as well as your new stuff. I remember maybe 5th or 6th grade, you were playing at a...
Just for those of you listening, I taught Mark guitar lessons when he was in 4th or 5th grade.
Yeah, it's been a good long time. But I remember I went to see you play. You were playing at a little ice cream shop we had.
Oh, yeah.
It's no longer there. Yeah. It's like a barber shop now, I think.
Frostbite.
I remember I didn't have any money, so I asked you if I can buy it for a penny, and you let me buy it for a penny.
Oh, nice. Man, that's great. That's
my first record.
That's really sweet. Well, you were a precious kid, man. Like, you were the sweetest.
Yeah, what happened?
I know. I'm just kidding.
No, but, I mean, it's been a pleasure having you on here.
And oh, yeah.
We hope that someday, you know, we can have you back and you can actually play some of these songs for us, because it's a really good EP, and everybody listening, you guys have to go check it out. It's called XY. You can... listen on Spotify, iTunes. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
So,
trust me, you need to check it out. It's like,
it's awesome. Really good.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you guys for listening and watching. For those of you who are on our YouTube channel, which we have, go check it out. And we'll see you in the next episode.
This podcast has been brought to you by UNA School of the Arts. Produced by Mark Gallegos and Lainey Green. hosted by Dr. Terrence Brown. Special thanks to Monica Collier and the SOTA staff.